Among the many formidable hitters that made up the Big Red Machine during the 1970s, its main source of power was Tony Perez. Over 23 seasons, he hit 379 home runs, none more significant than the one he hit in Game 7 of the 1975 World Series, which helped ignite a Cincinnati rally and led to the first of back-to-back championships. While that Reds team is regarded as one of the greatest of all time, Perez would eventually receive baseball's highest individual honor when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in the year 2000. A career that culminated in glory at Cooperstown can be traced back to the primitive surroundings he faced in the country where he grew up, a country rich in baseball talent then and now. As you see a recent trend of players successfully coming from your native Cuba to the major leagues, Yasiel Puig, Yoenis Céspedes, and even going back as far as Orlando and Levan Hernandez of nearly two decades ago, what have you noticed in terms of their transition that's similar to what you experienced when you came to the U.S. at age 17 back in 1960?
Well, it's different now because you get a lot of help, so. For your team, you know, what you sign with. I mean, you know, especially with the language, to have somebody to speak for you and the translator and things like that. I'm not used to have that. We don't have that many people working for us to help you. You got to get help from the other players or whatever. But it's more easy for them now to adapt to play the game here because that. It's they don't have to worry about that, and they make you a lot easier to go and play the game the way you know.
Now, coming into the 1975 postseason, the Cincinnati Reds simply blistered the competition, 108 wins, winning the NL West by 20 games. Then you guys swept Pittsburgh in the National League Championship Series. Did you feel a significant amount of pressure, especially once you got to the World Series, not just because of how well you played during the regular season, but because coming up short in the past postseasons, losing the 70 World Series to Baltimore, losing 72 to Oakland in the World Series, then losing the 73 LCS to the Mets, did you and your teammates feel some sort of burden to try and get over the hump in 75?
Yeah, we knew we lost to our first two World Series, like you mentioned, and then 70 and 72. And then we come back at 75, and we know we have to win. We got a name, a Big Red Machine, and mostly people know the Sparky Anderson, the manager. He was worrying about that, especially when we got down on the seven game, you know, in the sixth game, when we lost the sixth game and they tied the series. He was worrying on the seven because we got down 3-0 in the sixth inning, and we might lose the game. And that's why he was worrying. But and we know we got another game to play after the sixth game, and we had to play hard and come back. And we didn't come back and win that game.
That, as you said, the Big Red Machine, the Reds with yourself, Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, George Foster, Ken Griffey, managed by Sparky Anderson, as you said, 108 wins. The Red Sox, your opponents in that 75 World Series, 95 wins. They had Carl Yastrzemski, who was certainly used to the big stage, having played in that 67 World Series. But also, there were a number of young players who weren't experienced with postseason play. Did you guys in any way underestimate Boston?
No way. We know they got a great team. They know we got a guys who can play and guys who have a great season. But they missed one guy, was Gene Wright. Gene Wright was hurt. He didn't play. He didn't play in that series. And we know there was a little big weakness because of that. But they played great. They played good. They played the game right. And they tied the series in the sixth game. I mean, that's and then we have to play seven games. So nobody think they're going to go to the series, going to go to seven games. But they did. They did. They make it go to seven games.
It started out Game 1 at Fenway against Louis Tiant, who turned out a superb performance. He threw a five-hit shutout, and the Red Sox won 6-0. What made him so effective on that day?
Well, you know, Louis was a tremendous pitcher. He's a Hall of Fame pitcher to me. And Louis was throwing the ball very, very well. He knew how to pitch, and he knew how to get you out. He didn't do games, and then he got a chance to pitch in the third game because they rained out. You know, we had three-day rain, and we got three games, and he got come back and pitch the third game. I think he almost lost that game, but I mean, we knew we had a face-off pitching in Louis, and it was good.
That is, if your pitcher does his job. Well, there's a blast in the deep left center field, and it's tied up. Boy, he's happy. He clapped his hands as he rounded first base. He finally broke out of it.
That's dug out a little bit happy, you might say. And Joe Morgan there, all smiles. Sparky Anderson, they love to see this guy hit.
He hits a blast in the deep left center. That's gone. Way back.
You would come back to win game two with the ninth inning rally, then take two out of three at Riverfront Stadium, including a fifth game victory in which you hit two home runs. Now you come back to Boston in anticipation for game six, but as you just said, rain intercepts, causes a three-day delay. What was the anxiety level around the team to kind of get the series back going, especially since you didn't get to enjoy the comfort of being at home like the Red Sox did?
Well, we know we have to win one game. Going over there, and we try, and we were winning. We know that. But with those 3 days rain, we was a little worried about because we don't got a chance to work out outside. We didn't work out in one of the facilities with the group and one of the universities. But we don't know if they're gonna affect us, gonna affect our timing or whatever. And then we were going good, winning the series 3-2. But we got ahead on 6-3 into the ninth inning when they tied it up. But that happened. But we never lost confidence on us. We told Sparky we're gonna go out there and to win this game. And that was it. After the game six, we were at the clubhouse talking. The general bench, myself, Pete, Morgan, and some other guys, and we were talking about a great game we played. And that was a great game. And I expected for Mark to say, "How are you guys talking about that? I think it's time to see that we can be a world champion right now." But they didn't try to see that. And with Sparky, we got another game. Don't worry about it. We come back to more on them. And that's the way we feel and the way we play.
You talked about having confidence even after losing Game 6. After going up 6-3 in Game 6, did you feel kind of the air go out of Fenway Park at that point? And at the same time, simultaneously, did you feel that you guys were going to get those last six outs?
Yeah, when we were winning, we think that we were going to win right there. And we went ahead, I think that we got it. We got a good bullpen and stuff like that, but... Rally East would make a bad pitch on Carbo on 0-2, and he hit a home run at the game. He got him right there. Only one more pitch, and we were champs, but he didn't work that way, and they played the series.
And what were your immediate thoughts when you saw Bernie Carbo, a former teammate with the Reds, tie up the game at 6 with that 3-run home run in the 8th?
Well, we're still feeling we can win the game. We can come back and beat him in that game, but we didn't get anything into Cardinal Fish to hit our home run and win it. I mean, it's what? The game can be anybody's game, it's still tied, but when Cardinal Fish come out and hit that home run, so we have to play another game. That was it. That's the way we feel.
Players are usually immune to the significance of the game they're playing in sometimes. Was that the case for you during Game 6? Did it take until afterwards for you to acknowledge how great that game was?
Yeah, that game was a tremendous game. I mean, they see so many things in that game, and a lot of good plays, and the outfield and the infield, and a lot of good pitching, timing pitching, and so. But I mean, it was one of those games. It was fun to watch. It was fun to play, even when we lost. But it was fun to play.
Now, going into Game 7, you mentioned the 3-0 deficit against Bill Lee, and you certainly helped erase that deficit with a mammoth 2-run home run over the Green Monster off one of Bill Lee's Ephus pitches. Considering how that sparked the Reds' offense and eventually led to the 4-3 victory on Joe Morgan's hit in the ninth to win the series, was that the most important moment of your career?
Yeah, it's one of the most, yeah, because you know what it was? Because if we don't hit that home run, we might lose the series again. And that was all in three in one series. And I was sure I was looking for a pitcher who can hit it out because we needed a home run at that moment. And he did come out with a broken pitch and he threw it before. And I was ready to walk. You know, I know he got it. In the back of my mind, I know he got it and he might throw it again. And he did.
Drive. He's waiting for that one. That one is gone over everything. Perez timed that blooper pitch and slammed it over the screen out in the Lansdowne Street, and now we have another one-run ball game in this World Series.
That was a tape measure home run as the Cincinnati fans come alive. Mr. and Mrs. Bob Housem alongside the dugout. He almost looked like he was waiting for it, and you wonder if Bench had something to do with it down on second, relaying some signs, which can't happen with a catcher on second.
Now, Pete Rose would be named the most valuable player of that 75 World Series, just one of many accolades he accumulated over a 24-year career. And we all know what's taken place in the years since his retirement, including the most recent developments that confirm him betting on the Reds in 86 while as a player. There's a myriad of opinions on Pete's legacy, but as someone like yourself who was a teammate of his for so long, both in Cincinnati and in Philadelphia, and as someone who even played with him and for him through the end of your playing career in 1986, how do you view Pete Rose's career, and did the recent news alter your opinion in any way?
Pete was one of the greatest players I played with. You know, I thought we'd play in 1960, and Geneva, New York, and the Penn League, and we was in the same organization as Red until we got to the big leagues, you know, and he got there first in 63, I got there in 65, and then we played together for 6-7 years, and that was the way he plays the game, the way he do for the team, the way he wants to win. He was one of the best players I played for. I mean, he's a hit champion. I mean, Pete Rose, to me, he was one of the greatest.
Of all the members of that big red machine, as we just ran through, Rose, Bench, Morgan, yourself, is there anyone on that team that doesn't get enough credit that is probably the most underrated member of that team?
Hey, everybody in that team, you have to give you credit for. Ben Concepcion, George Foster, Geronimo, Ken Griffey Sr. I mean, everyone on this team did something. We got 8 guys going out there every day who know how to play the game, they know how to play to win, they know how to do something to win a ball game. And that's only now was only 4 guys. I mean, we might be the veteran on the team, those 4, but those guys who come up, I just mentioned them, they was we cannot win without them. I mean, that was a feat. I mean, that is where we feel.
I touched on the fact that you finished your playing career in 1986 at age 44, and you didn't go quietly. In your final week, you went 8-for-19 with a home run, 3 doubles, 6 runs batted in, and was named National League Player of the Week, and that home run would be the final hit of your career. Now, obviously, the dream finale is to ride off into the sunset with the World Series, but that usually depends on the rest of the team, how the rest of the team is. But for you, you can't ask for a more satisfying end to a career than that, right?
Well, when I retired in 86, like you said, I was playing the week, but the last week I played in my career, I was still going good, swinging the bat. But, you know, I think it was time to hang out because when you finish like that, yeah, you got to do it. And you got a great career, and you have to come back. You have to get out again when you're still going good.
Well, you looked good for a while and enough to get into the Hall of Fame in the year 2000. And describe just getting the call that you were in the Hall of Fame, and not just the call itself, but the fact that it was, you know, 9 years in the waiting.
Yeah, I waited 9 years. I know. You know, I had three. I never was MVP. You know, I was second one time and runner up, but I never was MVP in the league. I never lead any, you know, home runs or RBIs, but I got a lot of that stuff. I don't have no 500 home run or 400 home run, but, you know, I played good for my team and I bought it in. I mean, I knew a lot of people would break and maybe I'm not below because that, I mean, because I never have MVP or do that, but, you know, I guess from the people in Cincinnati and my teammates, I was an MVP because I helped to win a lot of ball games.
It took me some time, but I'm lucky and blessed to be here with the fellows inductees, Mari, Sparky, Carlton, my teammates, and the other Hall of Famers present. I doubt that a king and his coronation feel better than me today.
And now as an assistant to the general manager with the Marlins, you have the opportunity to watch Giancarlo Stanton on a regular basis. Is there anyone from the era in which you played who you could compare to Stanton in regards to power and the ability to hit towering home runs on such a regular basis?
Hey, this guy got a lot of power. I've never seen anybody hit a ball harder he does than during the ball. I mean, in ball games. I'm talking about BP. He can hit it in BP too. A lot of guys can hit ball the wrong way in BP, but in the game, I never see anybody hit it harder. I mean, a line drive out of here like he does. I see guys hit long home runs that we just fired you up. I hit a couple of long ones too, and a few guys, and they could go and hit long home run, but the way he hit us, I never see anybody hit. I never see ball hit the ball on the line. Line drive, home run, behind the hit us. They hit sooner, I mean, very quick. I mean, he hit it and the ball just hit his stance.
In addition to the 379 homers and 5 World Series appearances, Tony Perez also had 1,652 runs batted in and 7 All-Star selections. He was the first and remains the only Cuban-born player in the Hall of Fame. A great thanks to Tony Perez for joining us and to you for listening to Baseball As It Was.